Chapter 21, Concerning the Wild Llama Thunderbolt, and Unhappily Also a Lie Which Was Told. The riders on the height became smaller and smaller, and as the truck drove by the well of Orte Golan Sum, the sun was rising over the distant grassy hills in the east, bringing with it the certainty of warmth and light, and of the joy of travel. "Do you feel light and well, Kwee-chan?"
"Yes, I feel light and well, Big Tiger."
"That's the way Mongols greet each other," said Big Tiger. "Udburing told me so." At that moment, a slow, swelling, droning sound began to fill the valley. It was like the howling of wolves and the blast of trumpets, and one could not know straight away what to think of it, or whether it was horrible or beautiful.
"Is that something to be afraid of?" asked Big Tiger, disconcerted.
"I believe it's nothing bad," said Christian, for he noticed that Good Fortune was calmly driving on. The white walls of the monastery gleamed in the sunshine. In their midst stood the monks' little houses looking like dice. The Mongols' tents lay folded together in rows. Two old men were loading them onto camels which sat there and stretched out their necks when the swelling, booming sound began. The two old men looked up the mountain slope. When Big Tiger and Christian looked up, too, they saw four Mongols standing up there, dressed in the red robes of llamas. The young monks had clean-shaven heads, which were red from exertion, for they were blowing huge horns, and when one of them got out of breath, another began.
"These horns groan and howl," said Big Tiger. "Why do they do that?"
"They groan," Christian explained, "because they're being blown, and they're being blown because the sun is rising." Soon they were both merry again. The monastery of Orte Golan Sum disappeared, and the boom of the horns died away. They were now driving across a wide plateau, where there was little grass, but a lot of gravel, as evenly strewn as on the path of the Imperial Garden in Peking.
"Perhaps there's something to eat in the bags," said Christian, opening his one.
"In my bag," cried Big Tiger, "there are round white slabs with fluted edges and a flower printed on top of them, or perhaps it's a symbol."
"Probably it's a secret sign," Christian surmised.
"These signs," said Big Tiger, "are round as the noon sun and divided in the middle, so they must be lucky signs."
"And I've got little brown squares in my bag," Christian remarked, "and they smell of honey."
They settled down comfortably, and as they looked out at the endless plain where there were no animals or anything but stones, they chewed the little squares which tasted sweetly of wild honey. Big Tiger began to nibble one of the white, deckle-edged discs.
"This stone doesn't taste very nice," he said.
Christian tapped at the little window of the driver's cab, and when Good Fortune opened it, he passed him out a disc, asking, "Ain't you Beno?"
"Sheep cheese," said Good Fortune. "Where did you get it?"
"We got it as a present," said Big Tiger.
"That's because we're on friendly terms with the Duke of Hanta," said Christian casually.
"My respects," cried Greencoat. "Just what I'd expect of the young gentleman."
"Mongolian sheep cheese," said Good Fortune, "is a wonderful food. You bite off a little bit, let it soften in your mouth, swallow it, and you're well fed for half a day."
"May we offer our esteemed elder a little?" asked Big Tiger.
"Yes, pass it," said Good Fortune, and bit off a piece.
"Sheep cheese is as good as bread, and better."
"None for me, thanks," said Greencoat coolly. "I know it."
After 2 hours' driving, the landscape became more interesting. Though the plateau still remained almost as high as ever, there was grass and sharamot. Good Fortune had to drive slowly, for the ground was no longer firm. Red mounds of loose, crumbling earth, the so-called Loess Hills, formed an amphitheater in the distance, from which there was only a small outlet to the west. Toward this gap, Good Fortune steered his course, and by midday two yurts appeared just before they reached the defile. The sharamot thicket grew higher. There were bushes of it, and sometimes it looked actually like little trees, of which the grazing camels had left only the naked branches. Little camel foals were on the pastures with their mothers. They wore felt coats and caps, and when Good Fortune sounded the horn, they leaped in the air, all fours together. Dogs came running from the yurts, showing their teeth, and so much out of breath that they could hardly bark. Good Fortune stopped beside the first yurt and got out. He took the whip to keep the dogs at bay, but it was not necessary. A young Mongol came out of the yurt and called them back, but they began to snarl again when Greencoat got out. "Come down, boys," cried Good Fortune. "The dogs won't touch you." "Hamaga," cried the Mongol. "There's nothing to fear." "Do you feel light and well?" asked Good Fortune affably. "I feel light and well," answered the young man. "And have you had an easy and good journey?" Good Fortune took out his snuff bottle, which had a silver stopper. The Mongol also took a snuff bottle from his belt, but his was made of pure chased silver, and the stopper, with its thin wooden spoon attached, was decorated with coral. Good Fortune and the Mongol stood at the correct distance apart. They bowed like dignitaries, and with outstretched hands exchanged snuff bottles. But neither took a pinch, as Christian thought they would. Each only smelled the other's bottle, and solemnly handed it back, murmuring a benediction or a secret formula as he did so. After this, they smiled at each other like friends. When they had put back their snuff bottles, Big Tiger whispered to Christian, "Now they've clinched a friendship." "Like Good Fortune and Moonlight after the wolf hunt," whispered Christian. "Come on," cried Good Fortune. "Now it's Compass Mountain's turn. Here, I'll lend you my snuff bottle." Christian took it, and suddenly remembering what he had learned the evening before in Searchy's tent, he said in fluent Mongolian, "Do you feel light and well?" "Yes," the Mongol replied. "Have you had a good and easy journey?" "Good," Christian answered. But then he knew no more, and looked appealingly for help to Good Fortune, who stood proudly by. He then showed Christian the correct way to take the snuff bottle in his hands, and taught him to say, "Are you well in health? Are all your livestock well?" While Christian repeated the words, the Mongol exchanged his snuff bottle with him. Christian held it to his nose, and when he had given it back and got back that of Good Fortune, the salutation was at an end. It was then Big Tiger's turn, and after that Good Fortune said, "Now you know more or less how to behave. Anyone who exchanges this salutation with a Mongol is sure of his friendship." "And what about Greencoat?" asked Christian. "He thinks himself too superior to observe Mongolian customs," answered Good Fortune. "But isn't that impolite?" asked Big Tiger. "It's downright stupid," Good Fortune replied. But he said it in a low voice, for Greencoat came along just then and asked whether there would be something to eat, as he was hungry. "I'll just see," said Good Fortune, and leaving the whip outside, he entered the yurt. Christian and Big Tiger followed, and Greencoat tramped in behind them. The young Mongol was the last to enter. "I'm a herdsman," he said to Good Fortune. "Therefore, all I can offer you is some meat. My brothers and two others of our family herd the horses and camels of the rich Pandurichi, to whom these two yurts belong." "Pandurichi?" asked Greencoat, knitting his brows. "Wait 2 minutes," answered Good Fortune irritably. They all sat down in the yurt, the floor of which was covered with brown felt made from goats and camels' hair. In place of cushions, as in the king's yurt, there were saddle covers. "My name is Dasha," said the young Mongol, "and I think I know the gentleman who did not greet me. He's the merchant Greencoat, and I beg your forgiveness for his impolite demeanor." "The arrogant dragon will have cause to repent," said Dasha, lifting the wooden cover of an iron pot under which a low fire was burning. "I have cooked enough meat for 2 days. Please start eating." He took a fork and put a big piece of boiled mutton in each person's bowl, saying with an embarrassed smile, "I beg you to excuse me. We are bad people." "What do you mean?" asked Good Fortune. "You are treating us to a generous feast. Where does the badness come in?" "We Mongols," explained Dasha, "are not supposed to slaughter beasts until the fourth moon. But after all, we're no llamas, we're lawbreakers, and don't keep strictly to the rules." Good Fortune laughed. "Three cheers for the lawbreakers," he said. "Last evening, too, we had the good luck to eat in the yurt of one of them." "I know I'm not the only one," Dasha admitted, "but it's not right all the same. In the monasteries, the llamas are fasting at this time, and many of them get the sickness that makes the head and legs thick." "Where's Pandurichi?" interrupted Greencoat. "You seem to have a bad conscience about Pandurichi," Good Fortune retorted, munching. "Let me alone about him." "I must know," said Greencoat obstinately. "A man who has a clear conscience," Good Fortune admonished, "keeps a calm heart if there's a knock at the door at midnight." Suddenly the dogs outside began barking, and soon afterwards the short trot of a Mongolian horse became audible.
They could hear the rider cursing and the horse kicking, and then one of the dogs began to whine. Apparently the horse had kicked it. Then they heard the rider dismounting and the heavy tread of boots.
"I don't know that man," said Dasha, listening. He was about to stand up when the felt entrance curtain was thrown back, and the massive form of a wild-looking man filled the doorway. He wore a sheepskin coat with the wool inside and the skin outside. The skin had once been white, but now it was black from the smoke of many a campfire. Around his waist he wore a yellow sash, which likewise was no longer pure yellow. From it hung a tobacco pouch, a dagger, and a crescent-shaped flint for kindling fire. Even by Mongolian standards, his attire was shabby. But when you looked at the man's hat, you forgot about the burst seams and the missing buttons, for the hat was a most magnificent one, made of yellow silk and silver fox fur.
"Do you sit lightly and well?" asked the man in a rolling bass, and his glance flitted from one to the other of the strangely assorted company around the fireplace. When it reached Good Fortune and saw the uniform, it stopped, and the stranger's face suddenly became hostile. The sharp lines between the eyes deepened, and the black mustache trembled in the gust of his breath. "Chinaman," asked the man brusquely, "does the horseless car belong to you?"
"The horseless car belongs to the great General Wu," Good Fortune replied, undaunted, "and my name is not Chinaman."
"This warrior has exchanged the greeting of friendship with me," Dasha said appeasingly.
"Hm," growled the stranger, "so that's the way."
He sat down, put his hand in his sash bag, and exchanged snuff bottles with Dasha.
"Eat," Dasha bade him. "I see you've come a long way."
The stranger looked down at his dusty boots, drew his eating bowl from under his coat, and filled it with meat broth.
"That's enough," he said. "I eat no meat."
Then, for a while, everything was very quiet. Only the crackling of the fire and the gentle simmering of the pot could be heard, and Christian and Big Tiger began to feel uneasy.
"Why doesn't he eat?" Christian whispered to Good Fortune. "He's a llama," Good Fortune whispered back. "He must not eat any meat at this time."
Christian wondered and became more uneasy than ever. He thought of Yolros Lama, who was as kind as a father, and he thought also of the king's old cousin, who was riding day and night without stopping in order to see his old friend once more. Where might this rough boor, who was also a llama, be riding to?
"Please excuse me," said Christian, who had got a sudden brainwave. "I'll be back at once."
He put down his silver bowl and left the tent. First he glanced toward the dogs, but they were lying lazily in the sun, panting, with their tongues hanging out. All the same, he fetched Good Fortune's whip, which was leaning against the yurt. Beside it was another, thick as a cudgel, and beside this cudgel stood a rifle, a modern cavalry carbine. The polished shaft shone in the sun, and from the barrel hung a tuft of horsehair dyed red. Christian glanced at it timidly, took Good Fortune's whip, and crossed over to the truck. The warlike monk's horse was tied to the door of the truck. It was a piebald, short, wild, and vigorous like its master. A fringe of white hair surrounded the fetlocks and hung over the hoofs, making them look like paws. Ribbons were plaited into its mane, and its tail swept the ground. Christian prudently decided to give it a wide berth as he climbed into the truck. He took 3 pieces of sheep cheese from one bag and a handful of honey cakes from the other, and then went back to the yurt. He found the same dismal silence as before. They were all solemnly chewing mutton, and the llama was blowing his soup to cool it. Christian sat down and whispered to Big Tiger, "I'm going to do something splendid. Give me a haddock." Big Tiger put his hand in his pocket and took out the piece of sky-blue silk which he had received from the Duke of Hunta. Christian spread it out, laid the sheep cheese and the honey cakes on it, and then, taking the silk at each end, he bowed politely to the wild llama. He wanted to find a few suitable words in Mongolian, but, finding none, he said in faultless Peking Chinese, "I beg the great old father not to reject my poor gift." While Christian was speaking these beautiful words, the word he was looking for suddenly occurred to him, and he ended his little speech beaming with an expressive "Bolna!"
"You should have said Balvo," whispered Good Fortune, "and a note tells us, Balvo, is this right or will this pass?"
The llama stopped blowing his soup. He put down his bowl, looked at the haddock, then at Christian, and as he did so, his expression softened. Finally, he grinned from ear to ear.
"I to have?" he asked, and one could see that his Chinese was even worse than Bator's.
"My gift is a poor one, Your Excellency," said Christian. "I therefore beg for forgiveness. Bon vous?"
The llama snorted, put his hand into his sash, and pulled out a faded haddock, which he handed to Christian with a solemn bow. Then he accepted the gift.
"Little son," he asked, and his voice had a friendly boom, "you friend Sunit Wang?" And he pointed to the embossed sign on the sheep cheese, which Big Tiger had taken for a lucky symbol.
"The Sunit Wang is our esteemed friend," said Christian.
"And his old cousin, too," Big Tiger added, letting the wild man see the silver bowl.
"Great respect, say," cried the llama, bowing, whether to Big Tiger or to the silver bowl, or to both, they did not know.
Christian was sorry his bowl was not empty, but the llama noticed nevertheless where it had come from. He became quite genial and began asking questions in a mixture of Chinese and Mongolian until good fortune thawed and explained to him in Mongolian where they came from, where they were going, and how they had fared at the wolf hunt.
"Where is the Sunit Wang now?" the llama inquired.
Good fortune shrugged his shoulders and said he did not know. The llama cursed between his teeth. Then he boomed in a tragic bass which filled the whole yurt. "Heaven and earth come together, but the water on the mountainside cannot be found. I have ridden 10 horses almost to death, that my eyes might behold the Sunit Wang, and now he is I know not where."
"Why is he roaring so sorrowfully?" asked Big Tiger.
"Because he doesn't know where to find the king of the Sunnits," Good Fortune explained. Christian looked at Big Tiger, and Big Tiger took it he should speak up if he thought fit.
"Yesterday," he began slowly, "we thought it was a secret, but perhaps it's not a secret, and it can be told."
"Yes, it can be told," Christian agreed.
"What are you two talking about?" asked Good Fortune, who again could not follow.
"We're talking about a secret that isn't a secret, and that we can therefore tell," Christian explained.
"Rubbish," cried Greencoat irritably, but he quickly checked himself and smiled benignly.
"You there," asked the llama, pointing towards him with his forefinger, "what kind of man you?"
Greencoat pretended not to understand, and Big Tiger said,
"Yesterday evening, the king of the Western Sunnits set out with his cousin to ride to the monastery of Belin Tsum to visit the holy abbot Yolros Lama."
"How do you know that?" Good Fortune was just asking, but the llama would not let him finish.
"You say Sunit Wang in Belin Tsum?" he asked excitedly. "That truth? Quite sure?"
"My friend Big Tiger has never yet told a lie," said Christian convincingly.
"You little foreigner," cried the llama, pointing to him with his forefinger. "What name you?"
"My name is Compass Mountain."
"That good. All now know Dorchi,"
and he pointed to himself with a friendly grin.
"Any you beno?" asked Big Tiger.
The llama was more astonished than ever.
"Why did you not say at once that you speak Mongolian like 10 Mongols?" he boomed in his own language. "My name is Dorchi, or as such I am known. It is a Tibetan name and means thunderbolt."
"But you should be sincere with Thunderbolt, who is your friend."
"Pardon, Dorchi Lama," intervened Good Fortune. "This young person can only say Ene Yubeno and nothing more."
"If that's the case," boomed Thunderbolt, "I take back what I said." He pushed the 3 pieces of sheep cheese under his sash, ate a few of the honey cakes, and prepared to stand up. In order to make complete amends, he turned once more to Big Tiger and boomed,
"You say Ene Yubeno splendidly. Who taught it to you?"
"A man," said Big Tiger.
"Moonlight!" Christian burst out.
"Ha! Little man from beyond the seas!" bellowed Thunderbolt, overjoyed.
"You kindle great light in me! You also now, my friend! Where is Moonlight?"
"Moonlight is with the Duke of Hanta and the men of Sunit wolf-hunting," said Good Fortune. "Yesterday morning they were around the monastery of Ortegolansum, but now they're hunting at Yellow Hill Gap and beyond."
"It is wonderful that I met you," cried Thunderbolt. "I want to know one more thing. Is Moonlight whole and sound, or does he lack a part, an arm or a hand, or anything that way?"
"Moonlight is whole and sound," said Good Fortune. "His temples were split in two, but they were patched up."
"Thanks be to heaven! All has turned out for the best," said Thunderbolt with emotion. "My Moonlight, my little paw, I shall see you again."
He stood up, clenched his fists so hard in salutation that the fingers cracked, and bellowed, "Yabona!"
"Yabona!" cried Good Fortune, also standing up. Dasha hastened to be first outside. While the others left the yurt one after the other, Christian held Big Tiger back.
"Why did you take the ring off your finger?" he whispered.
Big Tiger hesitated to answer.
"It seemed to me likely," he said at last, "that this llama Thunderbolt would know the ring."
"I thought that too," Christian admitted.
"But what if the ring belongs to him?"
Big Tiger shrugged his shoulders.
"Then it just can't be helped," he said dejectedly, and went out after the others.
Christian understood quite well why Big Tiger had hidden the ring. If the llama Thunderbolt had recognized the ring, he would have bellowed it out, and Good Fortune and Greencoat would have noticed something. They would have said, "Big Tiger has told a lie, and his grandfather is also a liar. They have both lost their face. It has got quite black, and there will be no regard for the family any more. It has fallen so low." Even out in the sunshine, the matter did not take on a happier aspect. The dogs wagged their tails at sight of Dasha, but they growled at the strange men. The llama Thunderbolt picked up his gun as if it were the usual thing for him to go around heavily armed. Even Good Fortune did not handle firearms so casually, and Greencoat looked up at the sky as if he expected rain.
"I'm off!" cried the llama Thunderbolt, slapping his boot with his whip.
Then the dogs began to bark, but kept a respectful distance. It was only when the wild llama mounted and trotted off that they ran after him, trying to bite the piebald, which kicked out left and right. The llama's carbine glistened in the sun, the red horsehair shot out of its barrel like a non-stop fire, and he bellowed, "Yabona! Say Yabona!" Then, giving the piebald a mighty wallop, he galloped off. Good Fortune walked behind for a little way, carefully noting the hoof marks, and Christian looked on and asked, "Why is Thunderbolt riding back the way he came?"
"You notice everything, too," said Good Fortune,
"but it's not quite as you think. The llama had a long journey behind him. He said so himself. He came from the west, and he's going back to the west. We are also traveling westwards. Do you see the red Lois cliffs?"
"Yes, I see them," said Christian.
"Where they close in," continued Good Fortune, "and where it gets so narrow that a car can hardly pass through, a new world begins, with lots of beautiful grass and gentle hills. You can see a long way from there, almost to where the steppe ceases, and the region is called the Sharamuran Valley. If you watch out well, you'll soon see where friend Thunderbolt has ridden to."
"To the north or to the south?" asked Christian.
"To the south, of course," answered Good Fortune, "for he's going to Belinsum, to the king of the Sunnets. I shall sound the horn when we come to the spot."
"And what about Cowpond? Is it far?" asked Christian.
"Do you want a good dinner?"
"We want it very much," Christian answered, giving Big Tiger a nudge to back him up.
"It can't be helped," said Big Tiger, who hadn't been listening because his mind was still on the ring.
"Oh, yes, it can," cried Good Fortune. "We'll be in Cowpond for our evening meal. I'll drive as quickly as Thunderbolt rides."